What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we have been talking about a bunch of the greatest graphic novels and comic book runs of all time, while comic books have been on hold for a little while. And this week, we are going to be talking about one of the most unequivocally critically acclaimed runs ever, I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, definitely. A comic that broke.
Shut the fuck up.
A comic, and it's more specifically the collection of these issues, broke through to huge success in the mainstream literary world and media. This is such a big book.
Yes.
Are you
and
serious?
Of course, hold on. Just let me say the name of it, Black Hole by Charles Burns. Now, the book was originally released as 12 issues from 1995 to 2005. It was, as Justin mentioned, eventually collected into an edition right after that. And that is where folks started to read it, started to consume it in a very big way. Charles Burns did other things kind of in the middle of it, and he did a bunch of things afterwards and has continued to create work. But this is considered a masterwork of American literature. At the same time, there's been multiple attempts at creating some sort of TV or movie version of it from everybody from David Fincher was doing it for a while. Neil Gaiman was attempting to write an adaptation. Nothing has really worked. Nobody has really cracked it and figured out how to turn this into a movie or TV show yet. But folks keep trying. And even folks like while I was doing research for this, our old friend Abe Riesman, who's been on the live show a bunch of times, did a interview with Charles Burns in 2017 on Vulture, where he had him revisit Black Hole because they were reprinting it in a large size format. And he started it talking about how Cole Sprouse, who plays Jughead on Riverdale, when they asked him, what is Riverdale most like? He said, I believe it is most like Charles Burns' Black Hole.
Wow.
I'm going to say maybe Sprouse is a little wrong about that.
Well,
but
there is dead people in a river.
There you go. That's Riverdale, baby.
Also, if that's what you took out of the Black Hole, there's a lot more going on.
Yes. So there is a lot to unpack with this book. I can already see where this is going. When I picked this up and when I revisited this, I was like, I know how this discussion is going to go. Pete's going to be uncomfortable because there's sexual content. Justin and I will discuss it. Pete will say, fuck you. And that's the podcast. If you'd like to subscribe, iTunes, Android, Spotify. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. So let's talk about this, though, because I actually hadn't read this book for years at this point, like a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about.
That's weird, because I thought you would like masturbate to this book every night.
What is your deal, dude?
Just before you go to bed, you know?
What is your deal?
A little black hole before you go to bed, you know? Just a little bit of black hole.
Here's the thing, Pete. Sex is a part of the human experience. If you're going
big
to
time.
Yes.
I don't have a problem with sex, man. I don't know why you think that.
Because every time there's any sort of sex in a book, you're like, you fucking pervert. You like sex and reading about sex. When in fact, what I like is I think the art is phenomenal here and the storytelling is phenomenal here. The characters.
You're into tails. You like girls with tails.
Here's the thing.
What are you doing?
Here's the thing. This book is not, is like sort of like terrifying. It's sort of like.
Yeah, it's scary as fuck, man.
It's a horror book.
It's not about, it's about like that. First off, that time in your life, or just any sexual
encounter
has... That
first time you meet somebody with a tail? Yeah.
Yeah, your first tail experience. No, just like the sort of the horror or the like the body horror of exposing your naked body or seeing another naked body. Just like all the rush of hormones when you're young, trying to figure out and like being just crazy and not knowing why. Like this book does such a great job of putting that in a comic book horror context and telling a great story.
Yeah, I mean, specifically to that point, it starts off, one of the first images of the book is a partially dissected frog with a slit in its front that is very clearly vaginal. It's horrifying. It's tied to death. It's tied to being uncomfortable. It's tied to, I don't know what this is. You're not supposed to know what it is. And by the end, when at least one of the characters has reached a point of maturity, both emotional and sexual maturity. They're in a place that is open, is calm, is beautiful. There's power and beauty there, and they understand more about their own body and
you're
are naked
about the water,
and free with
right.
No. The water is a whole different thing that we could talk about, but I think that ties into it in the same way.
Because that's the only time people are calm in the comic is when they're floating in the water saying, I could do this forever. I could live here forever. Otherwise, it's shootings and weird shit. Like, there's no calm moments other than the water.
We're definitely jumping ahead of the plot here quite a bit, but like, that's not right? Like, that's birth. She wants to.
There's nothing more sexual than swimming.
What?
Right, Pete? No. Right, Pete?
No, yeah. I'm not going to back you up on that.
How do you feel when you're swimming, Pete?
Yeah, Pete, you have that chlorine fetish, right?
Yeah, I love the smell. Chlorine gets me hard. No, I think that like the thing that like I just think that like I like
just,
the.
Can I throw out a theory there? I feel like you're uncomfortable with sexual things, so you push back at them, but you love them.
I don't know about that. Wow. I think I like the idea, like, okay, like, here's in life, you know, we're trying to discover who we are, and there's this weird sexuality, and it's like we're trying to all figure it out. And then, like, okay, there's STDs and other things that could be the mutations that happen in this book if you're not careful or protected or whatever. But then it's like you either live in the woods or you get shot. Like, I don't know what happens later in the book, and that's what gets me a little kind of like worked up
so
or confused.
Let's give a broad overview of the plot.
Yeah.
So the broad overview of the plot, for the most part, this focuses on two different kids in a high school in a small town.
A man and a woman.
Yes. And when the man and the woman love each other very much,
liked each other just a little bit.
Right. So hold on. Let me just, you know how much you love recaps, Pete? Let me just get through this because this is going to be a nice short one. All right. The idea of the book is
so
there's two kids living
out
in a town. One of them is, I think you can characterize as a loser. The other one is a beautiful, popular girl.
Wait, did you say a loser?
Yes. What? Just let me finish the.
What? Just because he's a loser?
This is going to be three sentences long, wrong, Pete. How many glasses of wine did you have today?
That's not right.
Today. What is today? When does the day end?
Yeah.
When does a new day begin?
Yeah.
Where does the sauce begin?
How many podcasts ago? End. Is that what you mean?
How many days did you have in this bottle of wine? Is the real question.
I'm sure all the fans tuning in to see our expert analysis of Charles Burns' classic novel Black Hole are having a great time right now. It's about two kids, a bunch of kids who live in a small town that has been afflicted by an STD that causes mutations. The mutations, if you delve into it, are probably something having to do with what's going on in their psyche. Some of them get like a small mouth on their neck. Some of them are able to shed their skin. Some of them get more horrific mutations. And as these continue to grow and change, they explore more of what's going on with the town. It slowly morphs into a bit of a thriller where somebody seems to be killing these people, particularly the more horrific ones who are living in the woods, until ultimately the two main characters end up in very different places than where they started. As they move on to the next stages in their lives. So that's the broad strokes of the 12 issues, I think, right?
Yeah, that's good. Cool. And it's sort of pinned against, like, I want to say, like, 70s culture. Feels like the era it's in. Everyone's smoking weed. There's definitely more acid around than there was, at least when I was growing up. And it really, I mean, This book is about, to me, it's all about just sex and what sex does to us as people, especially kids. It's what makes us crazy. It's what pushes us over the edge, but it's also what defines us in so many ways. And you get to see these characters like go from the safety of their homes, they start having sex, and then they're out in the woods suddenly, and they feel deformed or they feel different. And in the book, it's physicalized with the effects of the bug. But I think that's what it feels like, and there's so many good things and bad things that happen to them because of because they've started to have sex.
Well, let's talk about these transformations a little bit, because there are things like Chris, who's the main female character. She ultimately gets the bug accidentally. She sleeps with a guy at a party. potentially, it's a little unclear, and I think purposely unclear, he has the bug when they have sex. He says, listen, there's something I need to tell you. And she says, shh, I know, I know, I know. And then later on, it seems like she didn't actually know.
Yeah,
what it's unclear whether she did or not. Yeah. But she ends up getting this thing where she can shed her skin, which is, again, a very like clear metaphor for what's going on with her. She wants to shed her skin. She wants to be somebody different than she is. But she can never really actually change herself, because once she takes off that skin, she's still the same person at the end of the day. Versus you have, I'm forgetting the name of the guy that she hooks up with. Rob. But he has this little mouth on his neck, which really very clearly says exactly what he is thinking inside, what he is feeling inside, the things that he can't say. But what I'm curious about is there are the kids in the woods who have the more horrific deformities, and they mostly are very nice. Like, they're very nice, they're very calm, they're very simple, straightforward people, except for, and this is one of the big twists of the book, except for one kid who has like a split lip cat thing almost going on, who seems very nice and seems very helpful, but ultimately turns out to be a bit of a sociopath and has been killing people in the woods, forcing one of the other deformed kids to kill people in the woods, and ultimately becomes utterly obsessed with Chris and kills most of the other deformed characters. So his makes sense to me. This character, his that deformity coming out.
Is that what you just said?
Yes, his deformity comes out and we see what he looks like on the inside, on the outside. But those other characters who are nice, who have these deformities, why is that? What is the purpose of that?
I mean, I've always taken it as it's their relationship to sex or growing up. They're like, it seems like a lot of those people sort of don't want to grow up. They want to just like stay hidden or stay like in the way they are. And so that rejection of the progress of life sort of comes out in deformities. I mean, one of my favorite things about this book that was always so scary is the two pages in the beginning of each issue where you saw sort of a yearbook photo of a kid drawn, just, and then you flip it, and then you see like some sort of diseased version of that. And I just thought every chapter, I loved that.
Yeah, to me, this was less about like the sex and more about the like changing that people go through once they kind of like leave high school. You know, like it was like the picture of somebody at high school and then at their 10-year reunion and then maybe their 20 or something like that, where like you're going through changes. You've been in school your whole life and now you're kind of released and people are kind of running in the woods and doing drugs and trying to figure out who they are and what they're about and what's going on. And sometimes people feel like deformed or people feel like, you know, not themselves or they need to shed their skin and be somebody else. And they're trying to kind of figure out things. And then kind of along the way, mistakes are made and they feel deformed because of who they were younger when you were kind of more pure, more innocent, more kind of cookie cutter.
One thing that I was really struck with reading this again the second time was the art. I mean, I think everybody's struck by the art, but like particularly the confidence of the art and consistency of the art from the beginning and the end, that artists change, right? They get better, they get stronger, they experiment with different things. But Charles Burns drew this over the course of a decade, maybe even more if he started earlier. And it's so pristine from the first issue, both in the blacks and the whites and the contrast of the, not colors, but the different shades, to the end. It doesn't feel like something that somebody drew over 10 years. It feels like something that somebody drew over a short period of time.
That's amazing.
Crazy.
And all the different little like sort of icons that exist, both the ones that stand out at the beginning and ends of the different issues and just the stuff that is used as part of the plot throughout the book are so like sort of still and horrifying and juxtaposed so nicely against the rest of the story to make it, do you feel unsettled with every page?
The other thing that I thought was kind of interesting, thinking about it as individual issues versus the graphic novel, which I honestly didn't even realize it was individual issues until recently, is, I think that explains a little more of, in a good way, the shaggy nature of the story, where, for example, you get, I don't know why I keep blanking on his name, but the main guy, he goes to a drug den with his friends. He doesn't feel particularly comfortable there. Sees a girl named Eliza who's standing pantsless. She just has a tail. He's clearly very interested in her. She's super high, makes him a sandwich, takes him back to her room. Things are starting to get a little heated, but they have a very good conversation, but they get cut off before it ends. He goes back and he visits her several times, and it's not initially clear that that's who he's going to end up with at the beginning of the story when we first meet her. It certainly feels like it's going to go in a different direction. And it's possible, and maybe even probable, that Charles Burns completely planned it out. But there does feel like, through plot lines like that, through like Eliza's arc almost more than anything, that there might be an improvisational nature to how he is putting everything together. Did you get that feeling as well? Or do you feel like it was more calculated and planned than that?
Yeah, it does feel sort of organic in the way it developed, because it definitely feels like a standalone episode for him, for the character, where he wanders in. It's like he's invited into this larger art world and feels like someone who's very functional, who has the bug and has grown a tail, when this guy is really struggling with his neck mouth, like we all would. A neck mouth that told the truth. Pete, how would you feel about that?
Well, to me, that kind of represented to me when you're hanging out with somebody and then when they get drunk or high and fucked up, and that's when they feel comfortable enough to speak the truth and like tell you how they really feel about things. That kind of liquid courage, that to me is what the neck mouth was.
Right. Like if somebody was normally too scared to talk about their opinions about sexuality, particularly through comic books, but then drank a lot of wine and got on a podcast.
Yeah, I don't see the relevance there.
Okay. Yeah, it doesn't really seem like it connects. What are some points of the book that stuck out to you? Some storylines, characters, anything like that? Justin?
Well, I just wanted to kind of quickly say that you lost me at shaggy storytelling. You know, I don't know what that fucking means. And it was weird that you said that.
Go ahead.
I was going to say it means that it's not like completely like clean throughout. Like it's not like, oh, I see why this is all one story that was conceived of at once. Because in this book, I was sort of interrupted myself talking about it. It does feel like this was written over a long period of time where like after four issues, it was like, okay, what do I have on the table here as a writer? How should I move these characters into the next situation? And it feels like specifically the relationship with Eliza was that, like it was something like, oh, she's there. And now she's the person that sort of is the happy end for these characters.
Does that help, Pete?
You're a piece of shit. I think that, like,
I asked you if it
to
helped.
Me, the tough part about this is
very shaggy Pete, answer, Pete.
Pete getting rescued by a fireman. You piece of shit. You let me die in this fire.
Yeah. If I wanted a fireman, I would have called one. You piece of shit.
If you guys could kind of reel it in so we get, if we could reel it in so we could talk about the story, that'd be great.
How is your tail doing, Pete?
It was great. I wish I had a tail. She makes it look fantastic, a tail life. I think that, like,
by the way, if you're listening to this episode, don't forget to get it trending with the hashtag tail life. Go ahead, take it away, Pete.
I think that, to me, the part that was tough, like, you can have a tripped out story or whatever, but, like, I want to walk away being like, okay, I understand what this person was trying to say. But the floating of the way thing kind of really kind of stuck in my craw the first time I read it. And the second time around, I was like, oh, that's right. This is why I don't like this story. Because I don't know what happens. Like, I don't know why we saw this moment in time. Like, yes, the transition from like kind of school life to real life or growing up is hard and that kind of stuff. But the floating away into this river or body of water kind of, maybe it's over my head a little bit.
Let me ask you, what did you think happened at the end with Chris? She was floating in that water. Do you think she...
It seems like she died. Like she had nothing else to live for and that was it.
Alex, what do you think?
I think, well, this actually comes from just reading that interview with Charles Byrne where they specifically talk about this.
Yeah, but don't use interviews. Fucking, we're asking just you what you think, not somebody else. What do fucking you think?
I think she's looking for rebirth. Like, I don't know if she gets it, and I think that's why it's open-ended. But like I was saying earlier, she strips naked, gets into the water, the place where she feels safe, and she floats in there and looks up at stars, and all she sees is darkness. She's trying to start again. That's what she's been doing the entire time. She sheds her skin, and she can't take herself off. She is trying to become literally born again and be a different person than she was before.
So you think she's a born-again Christian?
So she's Jason Bourne.
Yes, it was, again. Yes, both of those things at the same
she's
time.
She's Jason born-again Christian. Yeah. God, make that, what a movie.
I don't remember anything.
That would be a fantastic.
I don't remember anything about Jason my past Bourne except again. For Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
The only thing I remember is God.
So you, is that, are you saying that she did die in your,
no, I don't think she did die. I think she,
you think she swam back in and was,
she saw Jesus and was born again.
With these sort of ambiguous endings, my general take on it is I don't think it matters as long as the creator knows. And my feeling is that the creator knows what happens, by which I mean Jesus Christ,
kiss it up. Kiss it up.
Kiss to
no,
the
but seriously, sky. Like you can tell when somebody's like, I did an ambiguous ending because I didn't know what the ending was, versus this, which is like, I left it ambiguous, but clearly there is an intention there. Whether we know what it is or not, is up to our own interpretation.
She died.
Huh. Yeah, I think,
you think she died.
I do think. Yeah, I think it felt to me. My first thought was that she just. The water's cold. She just continued to float out into the water. Into
yeah,
the,
she doesn't want to go back. Yeah.
Darkness in the top and bottom, the ocean and the sky.
Well, you guys like to make fun of me reading interviews, but Charles Burns was like, no, she didn't fucking die. That's not what I think. So
she said,
fuck you
he
guys.
Said, no, she didn't fucking die.
Yeah, he
no,
said
specifically,
that?
Specifically, the question was about whether she commits suicide. And he's like, well, that's not my interpretation of it.
Well, and that's who different. Is he? He doesn't know shit.
He's nobody. He's nobody.
Yeah, why ask
he
that guy?
He spent 10 fucking Chuck years Burns. On a comic. Jesus Christ. Come on. Hurry it up, buddy.
And whenever you spend 10 years on something, by the end, you're just fully phoning it in. Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What are you referring to specifically?
Nothing. It's an ambiguous ending to my sentence. It's up for interpretation. So anyone can
good
think of what they want.
Let's talk about specific moments in the comic book other than these bigger plot moments. Were there things that jumped out to you that you thought were fascinating, disturbing, interesting, anything like that?
Yeah, a bunch of things. I mean, just images. The moment at the end when Eliza's tail is wagging in the sand, that just really jumped out at me. Mm-hmm. The skin hanging in the trees from the beginning. A lot of the dull parts hanging in the trees, just like that's just generally scary. More personally, the window pane issue reminded me of being a kid and hanging around with people who are doing acid and being like, wow, everyone's fucked up. That felt very real. Just like growing up in a small town where it's like, what do we do? Where everyone's bored. Let's bomb around town doing whatever. I heard there's a party over here. Stuff like that. It felt very honest.
Pete, were there things that jumped out at you?
Yeah, I just think that like, I appreciated the kind of like little moments that felt like somebody struggling to kind of find out who they were, you know, like the curiosity of kind of like, I shouldn't go into the woods, but I have to go into the woods. You know, if I was smarter, I wouldn't keep walking. I wouldn't keep going deeper and deeper into this kind of thing. And that's kind of, you know, kind of speaks to the fact of like, you know, when you're young, you don't know everything, so everything's kind of great type of thing. So it's like how they kind of keep going deeper, and then the more they find out, the more fucked up they get, and then the only kind of choice they have is to fucking, you know, just keep floating and give up on life. You know, it's that's kind of the where I thought what?
I was always very struck by, and this is more a plot arc thing, but going into this not knowing what to expect, and even in a certain sense because I had forgotten a good chunk of the plot the second time through, but that it almost pushes against plot in a certain way over character development, that you expect, they lay in the idea that somebody is killing off people in the woods super early. They're like, oh, there's an arm there. And there's certainly a question of, okay, is this a mutation where somebody's dropping arms, or is there a severed arm, or what is happening?
That's the thing. They don't explain things. Like, it's just like the way they're like, there's an arm there. It's almost
like casual. Life, dude.
It's like casual enough that like it happens in that world that arms are just kind of found. So it's like it doesn't go out of its way to kind of help the reader or all explain it. Like it's really up to your interpretation.
Yes. So something like that, though, I think like the arm thing eventually ties into, we find out this is this one character who is killing people off in the woods. He is severing people's arms. He's murdering them. He's tying them to trees, doing all of these different things. But it really takes its time parsing out this info. And when we eventually find this out, in a certain way, it almost feels like an afterthought. It's nowhere near as important as what's going on with our two main characters in the past that they're on emotionally, even though it is the thing that ultimately drives them both to leave town for two very different reasons. Like it's more, it's almost more like a force of nature than anything else when it still has the trappings of a thriller or a Hills Have Eyes horror movie type thing. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other final things you want to call out about this book? Any final thoughts? Pete?
Don't pick it up.
Oh, that's crazy.
That is a crazy thing to say. This is
Are you better for reading this fucking weird ass tripped out story?
Yes.
How?
100%.
And I'll tell you
I don't fuck with people with tails. I don't fucking.
No, yeah, I do fuck with people with tails. I was also I was rereading this while watching Normal People on Hulu. Which is also a show about like being young, falling in love, having sex, trying to figure out what it means, and just the and that's very like down to earth, no sci-fi elements. The blend of reading this book and that is it was really got me out of my head in a weird way, and I really liked it. Was a good blend of those two things.
So you recommend it. If you're going to do one, do the other.
This is a masterpiece of a book. The fact that this was done over 10 years, it's just like there's nothing else like it. It stands alone in this in its storytelling. Like, I think this is a great read.
I agree. It's just from a visual perspective alone, it is absolutely phenomenally laid out, drawn. I keep wanting to say colored, even though it's all black and white, but the way everything is shaded and inked is absolutely beautiful. The writing and characterization is fascinating. It's a disturbing read at points. It's a scary read at points, but it is very human at the same time. And if you have never read it, I think it is an essential piece of comics literature for understanding both that time and place from 1995 to 2005 in comics, but also the impact that you really got to stop saying that, the impact that it has had going forward from that point, because it hasn't gotten that TV or movie adaptation like a lot of its peers, but it doesn't need it. It doesn't need it because like a lot of other iconic works, the way of telling the story is through comic books. It's perfect. Pick it up.
And I do think one last thing. It does have an extra edge reading this in a time of quarantine or time where there's like a disease out there that is scary. Yeah. Like that for part of it, that paranoia just underpinning a lot of the book. And I love how they never really define it. They don't ever have to go into
into a television or a movie or something, you would have to make different choices, and then it's not that book anymore. That's why I'm saying you can't.
I don't think so. I think the tricky part of this, it'd be hard to – this feels like it would be best told as a Reefer Madness-style, like, 1950s movie where it's, like, super paranoid. But it's just really hard to strike that tone in a modern thing.
Even if you did like a 300 where you did like panel for panel, shot for shot, you couldn't.
A lot of people compare this to 300, so I take your point.
I would love to see Zack Snyder take this on. I think he would do a very good job.
What I mean by is they stayed very close to the material, what I'm saying.
Release the Snyder bug.
If you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday at 7 p.m. direct to the internet. Check that out on Crowdcast and YouTube, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe and listen to the show. comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. We'll see you next time on the stack, and let us know on Twitter what you want us to read the next time. We'll put up something around Thursday. Send us some suggestions. The more sexual and fucked up, the better. Pete loves it. He loves it.
Keep our tiny little tails wagging.
It's reading some cool stuff, some fun stuff.
This is cool, and you're fun.